The University of Detroit Mercy presents another brand new episode of Ask the Professor. Today's program was recorded using Zoom video conferencing technology.
The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with the University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my southeast, all the way southeast, on my screen, it's Professor Jeff Boats.
Hey, how's it going?
How's it going, Jeff?
Southeast. I wish I was in Canada right now.
That's right. Of course, Detroit being one of the only places you have to travel south to get into Canada from. One of the, Dave is actually showing us that he's our Canadian ringer right now, Jeff.
Even though it's not curling season, it'd still be a good place to be.
Now, Jeff, I'm going to guess that you weren't able to scratch that softball itch that you must usually have at this time of year. Were you able to play this summer?
Oh, yeah, actually. I'm scratching two different ways. My usual baseball league, it was delayed for a long time for safety reasons, and we're being very careful, but we're playing some games. And then my youngest son is just old enough to make me a little league coach for the first time. So
nice.
I'm having a lot of fun with that.
Tons of fun. That's cool. Great.
And that got delayed, too. That's going to go into the school year. It's got delayed so much. But, I'm glad these kids are getting out and having a little fun before the inevitable lockdown. It's, is it coming next month, November? It's coming.
Are anybody's kids going to be in school? Matt, are your kids going back to school? Yeah?
May God have mercy on us all. Yes, absolutely. They are going back to school. And frankly, the way they are talking about the grade school going, it sounds a lot like a minimum security prison. Sit at your desk for 8 straight hours, no recess, no lunchroom, no special classes. Teacher will come in and out of the room. What does that sound like to you?
A gulag.
Anyway. Nice little mic drop there. That sounds like a transition if I ever heard one. At least following the way things are on my screen, I've got Mr. Dan Maggio next.
Oh, hi, Matt. Hi, everybody.
What's shaking?
Not much. Just enjoying end of the week. Looking forward to the weekend. Sitting at home and doing nothing. Actually catching up on some TV.
Watching The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
I started watching The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and I love it. Love the soundtrack. Love the apartment. I want the apartment. I don't care how I get it. I just love the whole period piece.
Yep.
And everything about it. It's good. I love Susie. I want her to be my sister. And so
when are we going to get some new episodes?
I don't know. I'm still in season one, so I can go through season three. I just finished Cursed on Netflix, which was very good for anybody who's watched that.
The guy who plays the weeping monk in that show, I totally have a crush on because he played Lorenzo de' Medici in a series on the Medici that I just watched, and he's so cute.
It's good enough to watch it. I'm looking forward to the next.
I just finished watching the Medici, the whole run. That was a good
wasn't
show.
Wasn't that great?
Good show. And to see women. Dustin Hoffman playing the progenitor of them all was kind of crazy.
But it's the wives.
Yes.
So cool in that show. Yeah,
they are.
So that is a perfect segue to me introducing Professor Jim Tubbs.
Hello, hello.
We always have very spirited conversations about what everybody is into in their streaming services. Thank you, COVID-19.
I never watched Netflix before COVID-19.
Well, there you go. Got to watch something.
Yep.
The way it works. So, I was going to ask what you were into, but I think you covered that. Are you a little bit of a Renaissance guy there, Jim, in terms of what you like to consume?
I kind of enjoy it. I liked the Borgias series that was earlier.
With Jeremy Irons?
Yeah, with Jeremy Irons. Yeah, that was good. And that kind of hooked me on it, I guess.
Okay.
But it was the first two episodes that really hooked me on the Medici.
Mm-hmm. Now, someone I don't need to talk too much about liking medieval anything is Professor Heather Hill.
Well, once I get a little further into this book project, I may be cursing the whole Middle Ages.
Can you remind us, Heather, the writing you're going to do? What is it about?
I'm working on uppity women in the
West. So cool.
That's some awesome. Possible connections to contemporary uppity women.
Love it.
Like me.
out talking nasty women.
Nasty women. I knew you were going to say it. If you didn't say it, I was going to say it. It's been 4 years, but I hope no more. You came to an Ask the Professor recording, Heather, and you it was like less than 24 hours after the debate 4 years ago, and you had a nasty woman button on. I've never forgotten that. I thought that was awesome. Professor Mara Livesey is here with us today.
Hello.
I don't see you eating any like freshly baked sweets, but I did see quite a large snifter of a beverage.
It looks like water. But is it?
Uh-huh. Professor Dave Chow is literally face palming without using his hand.
Oh, pleasure to be here, I think. Oh, Zima. Those days.
I mean, you felt like you were high society, I swear. And remember, that's in the wake of Crystal Pepsi. Hey, let's make every beverage clear. Can we make clear milk? Oh, my gosh. Now, Professor Stephen Manning, you've heard a few generational analogies to beverages. How would you describe yours?
Oh, I remember something called, it was a pre-mixed, not orange juice. It was more like Tang, and it was called...
Sunny Delight.
No,
yeah, that's what it tastes like.
Was it Tango? I think it was called Tango or something.
Oh my god. Oh,
Tango is a soft drink originating in the UK. First launched by Corona in 1952.
Okay. That's Tango, Heather?
Yeah. Oh my god. What's in it though?
Oh my.
It's a secret.
So
the theme of questions is all about obscure and disgusting mixed beverages.
Someone needs to send that in, frankly. Yeah. I totally agree. Totally agree.
This is a college. We're waiting for your contribution.
We have to be careful, Aaron, when we dare the listeners, they almost always come through and relatively quickly. Hey, Professor Beth Oljar, did somebody just bite you?
Cat appears to be intent on clawing and biting me, yes.
Oh, that's too bad.
She's not at the moment currently ensconced in her little bed on my desk. So, yeah. I'm trying to stay away from claws. But I know she does it with love, so.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, you're going to fall off the desk if you keep doing that. Okay.
Unbelievable. It's been a little while since my kids were under the table here and like biting and clawing at me, but human children.
Sounds like your cat should go to the minimum security prison with Matt's kids.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Therapy animal.
Yeah.
Be behind your plexiglass divider and learn.
That's my retirement plan. I'm going to open an animal shelter with like puppies and kittens that people can use when they're having a bad day at work.
What a great idea.
You can come rent them or something and have them in your workplace or I don't know.
I'll feel like they rent plants.
Beth, the last year that I taught at CCS, they actually had a therapy sloth drop by.
Well, ooh, so there you go.
That's my speed.
A sloth. Exotic.
A therapy exotic. Sloth is like, tell me how you feel.
Before we get any further down that almost literal rabbit hole, I want to make sure that we honor our guest panelists today. Sister Erin McDonald from University Ministry is also joining us.
Hello, everyone.
Howdy.
It's Friday, which means nothing because I'm working tonight. I'm working 3/4 of the day tomorrow and all day Sunday. But I've got plenty of coffee in Jesus, so I'll make it through.
Absolutely. Good.
Well, the Sunday thing you presumably knew was part of the deal, right? With the
nuns, we got to always be on Sundays, but yep. We got a little extra work with our first year retreat this Sunday. We have 21 freshmen joining us for a day full of my favorite icebreakers and prayer time, reflection, and fun.
That is awesome.
You get in there and break some ice.
Oh. Yeah. How many degrees do you need to have to be playing bed sheet volleyball?
Wow. Okay. Well, all I could think about when you said what day is it or is it Friday is that my mom has this tiny little movable letter sign that she puts in the window of her kitchen, and she's pretty much the whole pandemic been putting some sort of tiny, you know, inspirational phrase.
There was a time during our lockdown where I was like, I think I really need to put in like the kind of calendar they have like in a memory care unit where it's like today is Tuesday, yes, with like a big smiley face and it's like the date and the weather outside is.
Yes.
Like, or just remember to cross off the days on your wall calendar so you'll know which one is next.
Exactly. What's happening? Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win a prize. You can send us questions in a number of ways. You can email us directly at atp@udmercy.edu. Reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp. Find us on Facebook or ask your favorite smart speaker to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. We have a new set of questions here, sent in by longtime question sender Kimberly Richards of Van Nuys, California, and we're always very thankful for her questions. So let's jump right in. What is a pole, P-O-L-E, a pole of inaccessibility?
What?
Wait, a pole, P-O-L-E?
P-O-L-E, what is a pole of inaccessibility?
Does this have something to do with latitude or longitude?
You know, it does, Beth, it does.
Okay, I'm done now.
That's my guess.
It's my contribution. Say, it's
what was that, Jeff?
Oh, it reminded me of something to do with poles and complex analysis, but I guess I'm wrong. All right, never mind.
Maybe you're closer than you think. Any other guesses? It does have something to do with poles, but not the north or the south pole of the Earth.
Magnetic
Getting warmer. I mean, inaccessibility certainly has a lot of things associated with it, right? So poles of inaccessibility are mathematically calculated points in the middle of every continent that makes it the furthest from a shoreline of an ocean. So technically speaking, this would be the hardest place to reach on that landmass. And apparently, the one in Asia is in all directions 1,644 miles from any kind of reasonable coastline. That is pretty inaccessible.
That's neat. I've never heard that term before, but I used to do consulting work in Kansas every summer, and there's a sushi place there, and I used to think, how fresh can this be? That's at least 1,000 miles.
Good question.
I mean, it might even be closer to the Arctic Ocean than the other two.
Just hope it does not come in through the U.S. mail.
Oh,
you'll see it in January, maybe. Yeah.
It better be smoked.
How about this one? A little more geography. What's the largest island in the Mediterranean?
Crete?
Sicily?
Sicily.
Yeah, it is Sicily. At about just short of 10,000 square miles, Kimberly says, the island is made up of rocky terrain and even has Mount Etna, an active volcano, but still suffers from the characterization as being the piece of gum stuck to the top of the boot that is the
country. No. Taormina is a beautiful place.
It is gorgeous, right?
Yeah.
Gorgeous. And I think I've told this story before, but I can't help myself. I never understood growing up Italian why Sicily really doesn't feel like it's a part of the country, even though it is, you know, politically speaking. But boy, oh boy, my 92-year-old grandmother made a new friend when this other person joined up at her rest home. And when my grandmother, who is from Florence, found out this woman was from Sicily, they never spoke again. Early 90s, whoa, that's all wow. I can say. They hate each other's guts.
Maybe she thought she was mafia.
It's possible. It's possible, right? But holy smokes, they were getting good and everything. I'm like, hey, where's your friend? Whatever. Oh, we don't talk anymore. I'm like, really?
People have some deep-seated hatred there every now and then. You know, I found out before my dad passed, he hated the Japanese for the longest time because they invaded his village during World War II.
Well, that's not entirely
repeatedly
unrealistic.
So this one is going to be tough on a technicality, but what's the largest island in the world?
Greenland.
Madagascar.
Yeah,
Australia, Antarctica.
You know, you covered all the bases here. The correct response is Greenland, but only because of a technicality. Anybody else would say it's Australia, except for the United Nations have described the island of Australia as a continent. So it cannot be viewed as an island.
That's cool.
Why?
Yeah,
as the UN says so.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Come on. I'm noticing a theme here in Kimberly's questions, by the way. Which country has the highest number of wild tigers?
India.
India. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's India. And I believe we had this semi-recently, but it's always worth repeating. Which country has the most tigers in its borders?
The U.S.?
The United States is correct.
Blame Siegfried and Roy.
Because we allow people to own tigers legally. And that means we are the biggest tiger breeding ground that is not wild in the entire world. Speaking of streaming shows, need I say?
Just think, who hasn't seen Tiger King?
Tiger King, yikes.
Me. Not once.
Me.
I did watch it once.
Once was enough.
Yes.
Do you mean once, like you watched the whole season once, or do you just mean you watched one episode?
One episode.
Okay. I was like, well, I haven't watched the whole season twice, if that's what you mean.
One preview was enough for me.
Yeah, that's enough. The national flag of Bermuda has a unique image on it. What is that?
Is this the one where they got like a machine gun or something like that?
No.
A triangle?
Nope.
Pennant?
Sailboat?
You know what? It is a boat, Stephen, but it's not a sailboat.
Like a pirate ship?
A sunken ship?
Ah, Sister Erin, you said you weren't going to get any right. It's a shipwreck. Yes, it's a shipwreck on their flag. Yes.
Well,
well that's a good representation because they've got their fair share of those.
Yeah,
it says it represents the flagship of the Virginia Company because Admiral George Summers deliberately crashed the ship in 1609 to avoid an oncoming storm.
Okay. Would that be like the equivalent of me crashing the car to avoid a parking space or something like that?
I like your analogy. However, I also want to acknowledge Aaron partial credit for the triangle. I would have guessed, oh, there's something unique, you know.
Yeah.
Perfect sense.
They should just embrace it, right?
That's right.
Own it.
Exactly.
I read this a couple of years ago, and I'm so happy it's coming up as a question because it's just one of those sort of simple sort of things. There is a very famous river on the planet Earth that has exactly, are you ready? Zero bridges that span it. What is it?
Amazon?
It's the Amazon.
I guess, yeah.
Right.
Amazon. Yeah.
Zero bridges. It's too wide. It's way too wide. Unbelievable. And by the way, the cultures along the Amazon have made good business with ferrying people across. So why would you build a bridge if you can make money that way?
They may or may not make it across, but they get ferried.
So some people who follow the NBA know that the NBA's franchise in Orlando is the Orlando Magic. Why was this franchise named this way? Why is Orlando nicknamed the Magic City?
Magic Kingdom?
It's not.
Because of a lot of voodoo?
That's a good guess.
Is it the home to, like, what, Harry Houdini's Summer Cottage or something like that? I mean,
I want to put the reason here in a box labeled this. You hear the Windy City when you think of Chicago and you go, oh, it must be windy there, but it's way more boring, right? It was because of a group of politicians that never stopped giving speeches. That's where Chicago got its nickname. What is a totally boring version of why something would be called the Magic City?
Because it's really actually boring and they want to make it sound better?
No, it says 60s, 70s, 80s era, fast growing urban development. That's why it's called the Magic City. I find that personally really boring. Okay, I think you all know this one, but it's always good for a chuckle. Which state is home to the company that makes Arizona iced tea?
New York.
New York.
New York.
Brooklyn, New York. Yes, that's where Arizona iced tea is from. Yep. For the record, the founders wanted to compete with Snapple and needed to find something very, very catchy. And for whatever reason, they chose the word Arizona.
I'm telling you, Diane Manica could start brewing right now.
Well, I suppose it's hot and dry, right? So if you could, people in Arizona would appreciate iced tea or would drink a lot of it. So if you could associate the tea with.
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing a lot of it when I was in Arizona.
it's a tourist trap.
Right, exactly.
Souvenir you take home, that's all.
So how about this? How many individual islands make up the state of Hawaii?
7.
9.
8.
9.
15.
You know what it says here is that it's 8 major islands, but how many islands make up the state of Hawaii?
Oh, okay. Well, let's see.
Hawaii, Oahu, Maui.
There's that little
Hawaii,
one.
Hawaii, Lanakai.
Okay. There's a leper island.
The little one the Navy used for target practice.
It's not there anymore.
Let me think. Oh.
How about this one for just a little bit of a softball? Leading up to the era of colonization, what were the islands called? Does anybody remember?
The Sandwich Islands.
The Sandwich Islands. There we go. So all of the Sandwich Islands make up the state of Hawaii. By some estimation, it could be up to 100 individual land masses.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of little ones.
Yep, exactly. But I'm really impressed. Beth just pulled it right off the top of her head. I think you knocked off at least 4 of the big islands, including the Big Island, also known as Hawaii. So pretty interesting stuff.
So are those small islands, are they occupied at all? Or
it's a good question. I, if you can believe it, have an uncle-in-law who lives there with his family, and they make a joke about the fact that sometimes like a sandbar will just rise above, you know, it's volcanic, right? The level of the water. And they're like, oh, we just gained a new island. You know, I mean, it's like, it's a different way of life. Let's just put it that way.
And there's one off Maui that's just a little crescent shape, that's great for diving. And then there's another one over near there, Molokini or something, that the Navy used for, for shelling practice. Right. And there's a lot of old live shells still there. So
you don't want to
go there. No, it's well south of Molokai. Okay. It's right off of Maui. It's a small island.
Okay.
But developers want it, but it's too dangerous.
So how about this one? Because we're getting close to the end here.
Okay.
The island nation of Papua New Guinea, okay, has the most languages spoken within its borders of any country in the world. How many languages?
400.
It's more.
700.
A 1,000.
It's more than 700.
Someone said 1,000.
Yep.
It's lower than 1,000.
Oh.
902.
It's lower than 902.
850.
It's 820 total languages spoken within its borders. That's a lot of languages.
Wow. Now,
it doesn't make a lot of sense without a baseline. At least that's what the scientist says. How many spoken languages are there within the borders of the United States?
400.
350. Yeah, it's about
really?
400. Yep. Just about half of that. The best. So, oh, I'm sorry.
So how are they? There are 350 languages spoken in this country. So
yes.
Are they counting dialects? Are they just?
That's a good question. It says, because I figured that someone like you would ask that question. Kimberly Richards says, the linguistic experts tell me that there are 6,912 languages spoken on planet Earth.
Okay.
I'm sure my mom rattled off a handful of those when I was in trouble too, so.
If she was using your middle name.
The full baptismal name.
Like migrants and refugees that come, like, for, or even, you know, folks who are visitors and things, but like lots of tribal languages in places. So, you know,
I think probably that, at least 100 Native American tribal languages.
Right? Yeah. So
I remember years ago, the chief of police of Southfield told me there were 127 languages spoken that he knew of spoken in Southfield.
Wow. So,
there are a lot.
Yeah, I believe it for sure.
Okay.
So we've reached the point in our show. We didn't do it in our last episode, Aaron, so you'll have to follow along here. We call it ATP Favorites. We actually had a group of listeners write a list of over 150 things that you can have a favorite of, and they're interested in what these intellectuals do with their spare time.
intellectuals are you referring to?
Yeah, and who's got spare time?
Everything I say is a lie. I would like to refer to the list made by the Burroughs family, and the next thing on the list is they want to know what your favorite scary movie is.
Get Out. Easy.
Yeah, that's easy.
Good. That's good.
Jaws.
I grew up on
Cape Cod, and I learned that Jaws was filmed there, and I stopped swimming in the ocean for years.
I think, Aaron, is that the opening sequence of Jaws remains the scariest opening sequence in film, although I agree that Get Out was also incredibly scary. Yeah,
I think the music that goes along with Jaws too helps intensify the effect. Yeah,
it's brilliant.
We're gonna need a bigger boat.
Yep. That's right.
For me, it would have to be Friday the 13th. That's the first one I ever saw.
That's scary.
Yeah, that was good. That was scary.
What were you saying, Heather?
Alien, the first Alien, is pretty scary.
Oh yeah,
it is. Yeah.
I'm old school. I like The Exorcist.
That's great scary. Too.
Got to watch that in a cold, dark room.
The Omen or The Exorcist? Those two were always pretty good.
Both. The Exorcist is.
If we can get away from movies, there's an episode of Doctor Who, the one where you first see the Weeping Angels. I actually jump scared. Yep.
That is very scary. Yes. Yes.
Yep. It's one of the better ones.
Taken this in an interesting direction. I was trying to think what my response would be, and at some level, I want to say Scream, just because it's a parody of the whole thing, and it also is a good horror movie, and it's right.
Very postmodern. But
in terms of being like really, really scared, I believe I've mentioned it before on the show, the Blair Witch Project scared the living you-know-what out of me. And
what was that other one that you suggested that one time? The Sean Connery one? The Banshee?
Zardoz?
Oh, that I wouldn't say that's a horror movie. That was Darby O'Gill and the Little People, but it did scare me when I was little.
What?
That's a horror movie.
Because of the Banshee special effects for the 50s. That was creepy, man.
We're missing Halloween.
Yeah.
For the music alone.
And a great film.
Yeah, it's a great film, but the music is spooky.
I'm afraid, professors, that our time has come to say goodbye, Beth.
Goodbye.
Steven.
Bye.
Dave.
See ya.
Mara.
Bye.
Heather.
Bye.
Jim.
Sayonara.
Dan.
Goodbye.
Jeff.
Adios.
And Aaron.
Sad to go. Hopefully I wasn't so bad that they won't invite me back.
Come back whenever you want.
Come back whenever you want. And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed from wherever we are. Some of us are on campus right now, but most of us aren't. But usually we're in the Briggs Building at the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. We're produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Till next time, I'm your host, Matt Myo.